because his wife's thoughts are eerily similar to her character's thoughts. But I don't want him to have that impression of her at this point. After all he's been through, he deserves to at least be able to preserve a positive memory of his marriage. She used to get so angry with me because I didn't read her manuscripts. She needed that validation from me, even though she got it from everywhere else. Her readers, her editor, her critics. For some reason, my validation seemed to be the only validation she wanted. Because she was obsessed with you. Where do you get your validation? He asks. I turn my head toward him again. I don't, really. My books aren't popular. When I do receive a positive review or get an email from a fan, I never feel like they're talking to me. Probably because I'm such a recluse and never do signings. I don't put my image out there, so even though there are readers who love what I do, I still haven't had the experience of being told to my face that what I do matters to someone. I sigh. That would feel good, I imagine, for someone to look me in the eye and say, "Your writing matters to me, Loan." As soon as I finish that sentence, a meteor shoots across the sky. We both follow it and watch as it streaks across the water, reflecting in the lake. I stare at the lake, framing Jeremy's head. "When are you going to start on the new dock?" I ask him. He finally finished tearing the old one down completely today. "I'm not building a new dock," he says, matter of fact. "I just got sick of looking at that one." I would make him expand more on that, but he doesn't seem to want to. He's watching me, even though Jeremy and I have been making eye contact a lot tonight. It feels different in this moment, heavier. I notice his eyes flicker toward my lips. I want him to kiss me. If he tried, I wouldn't stop him. I'm not even sure I would feel guilty. He sighs heavily and lets his head roll back in the grass until he's looking at the stars again. "What are you thinking?" I whisper.
"I'm thinking it's late, and I should probably lock you in your room now."
I laugh at his choice of words. Or maybe I laugh because I've had two margaritas. Whatever the reason, my laugh makes him laugh, and what almost became a moment he'd probably end up regretting turns into a moment full of relief. I go to the office to grab the laptop so I can work in the bedroom after he goes to sleep. When he's turning out the lights in the kitchen, I open the desk drawer and grab a small handful of the manuscript to take to my room with me. I tuck the pages between the laptop and my chest. There's a new lock on the outside of the bedroom door that I haven't seen. I don't want to examine it or figure out if it could somehow be unlocked from the inside, because I'm sure my subconscious would remember that, and I would somehow get past it. Jeremy is behind me as I walk into the room and set my things on the bed.
"You have everything you need?"
he asks from the doorway.
"Yep."
I walk back to the door so I can lock it from the inside after I shut it.
"All right, then. Good night."
"All right," I repeat with a smile. "Good night." I go to shut the door, but he puts his hand up, stopping me from closing it all the way. I pull it open again, and in the split second since I almost closed it, his expression has changed.
"Low,"
he says, his voice quiet. He leans his head against the doorframe and looks down at me.
"I lied to you."
I try not to look too concerned, but I am. His words rush through me, and I think back to our conversation tonight, the conversations that came before it.
"You lied about what?"
"Verity never read your book."
I want to take a step back, to mask my disappointment in the darkness, but I stay put, squeezing the doorknob with my left hand.
"Why would you say that if it wasn't true?"
He closes his eyes for a brief moment while inhaling. When he opens them, he stands up straight through his exhale. He raises his arms and grips the top of the doorframe.
"I'm the one who read your book. And it was good, phenomenal, which is why I suggested your name to her editor."
He lowers his head a little, looking me firmly in the eye.
"Your writing matters to me, Loan."
He lowers his arms, grips the doorknob, and closes the door. I hear him latch the lock before his footsteps disappear upstairs. I fall against the door, pressing my forehead against the wood. And I smile, because for the first time in my career,
Someone outside of my agent has given me validation. I cozy up in the bed with the chapter I brought with me. Jeremy made me feel so good just now. I don't even mind being a little disturbed by his wife before I fall asleep.
Chapter 9. Chicken and dumplings. It was the fifth meal I cooked after living in our new house for 2 weeks. It's the only meal Jeremy ever threw against the dining room wall. I'd known for several days that he was upset with me. I just didn't know why. We were still having sex almost every day, but even the sex felt different, like he was disconnected. Fucking me because it was our routine and not because he craved me. That's the reason I decided to cook the goddamn dumplings in the first place. I was trying to be nice by making one of his favorite meals. He was having a hard time adjusting to his new job. To make matters worse, he was upset with me for putting the girls in daycare without consulting him first. Back in New York, we hired a nanny as soon as my book started selling. She would show up every morning when Jeremy left for work, so that I could retreat to my office and write every day. Then she'd leave when Jeremy came home, and I'd come out of my office and we'd cook dinner together. It was a great setup, I'll admit. I never had to care for them when Jeremy wasn't around, because we had the nanny. But out here, in the middle of nowhere, nannies are hard to come by. I tried watching them myself the first 2 days, but that was beyond exhausting, and I wasn't getting any writing done. So one morning last week, I was so fed up, I drove them into town and enrolled them into the first daycare I came across. I knew Jeremy didn't like it, but he realized we had to do something if we both wanted to continue to work. I was more successful than he was, so if anyone was going to stay home and care for them during the day, it certainly wasn't going to be me. But the girls being in daycare wasn't what was bothering him. He seemed to like the interaction they were getting with other children because he couldn't shut up about it. But we had discovered a few months earlier that Chasten had a severe allergy to peanuts, so Jeremy was cautious. He didn't want anyone caring for her but us. He was afraid the daycare would be careless, even though Chasten was the kid I actually liked. I wasn't stupid. I made sure they knew all about her allergy. Whatever it was that had him irritated with me, I was positive it was something a bowl of dumplings and a good fuck would help him forget. I intentionally started dinner late that night, so the girls would be in bed when we ate. They were only three, so luckily they were tucked in by 7. It was almost 8 when I set the table and called Jeremy to come and eat. I tried to make it as romantic as possible, but it's hard to make chicken and dumplings sexy. I lit candles on the table and set up my playlist through the wireless speakers. I had on clothes, but underneath them, I was wearing lingerie, something I didn't do often. I tried to make small talk with him as we ate. "I think Chasten is fully potty trained now," I said to him. "They've been working with her at daycare."
"That's good," Jeremy said, scrolling through his phone with one hand and eating with the other.
I waited a moment, hoping whatever it was on his phone would take a back seat to us. When it didn't, I adjusted myself in my seat and attempted to grab his attention again. I knew conversation about the girls was his favorite subject. "When I picked them up today, the teacher said she's learned 7 colors this week."
"Who?"
he said, finally making eye contact with me. "Chasten." He stared at me, dropped his phone flat on the table and took another bite. What the fuck is his problem? I could see the anger he was trying to stifle, and it made me nervous. Jeremy never got upset, and when he did, I almost always knew why he was. But this was different. It was coming out of left field. I couldn't take it anymore. I sat back in my chair and dropped my napkin on the table. "Why are you mad at me?"
"I'm not mad."
He said it too fast. I laughed. "You're pathetic." He narrowed his eyes and tilted his head.
"Excuse me?"
I leaned forward. "Just tell me, Jeremy. Enough of this bullshit silent treatment. Be a man and tell me what your problem is." His fists clenched and then unclenched.
Then he stood up and slapped his bowl, sending it across the table and all over the dining room wall. I had never seen him lose his temper. I stiffened, wide-eyed, as he stomped out of the kitchen. I heard him slam our bedroom door. I looked at the mess and knew I'd have to clean it up after we made up, so he'd know how much I appreciated him, even if he was being a major fucking douche. I shoved my chair under the table and walked to the bedroom. He was pacing back and forth. When I closed the door behind me, he looked up and paused. He was trying so hard in that moment to put his words in order, everything he needed to say to me. As angry as I was at him for throwing the meal I had worked so hard making for him, I felt bad that he was upset. "It's constant, Verity," he said. "You talk about her constantly. You never talk about Harper. You never tell me what Harper learned in school, or how Harper's doing with potty training, or all the cute things Harper said. It's Chasten all the time, every day." Shit. Even with how much I try to hide it, he still sees it. "That's not true," I said. "It is true, and I've tried to keep my mouth shut, but they're getting older. Harper's going to notice that you treat them differently. It isn't fair to her." I wasn't sure how to get out of that predicament. I could have gotten defensive, accused him of something I didn't like, but I knew he was right, so I needed to find a way to make him think he was wrong. Luckily, he turned away from me, so it gave me a moment to think. I looked up, like I was turning to God for advice. "Stupid girl, God won't help you out of this one." I stepped forward, cautiously. "Baby, it's not that I like Chasten more, she's just smarter than Harper. So she accomplishes things first." He spins around, angrier than before I even open my mouth. "Chasten isn't smarter than Harper. They're different, but Harper is very intelligent." "I know that," I said, taking another step toward him. I kept my voice low, sweet, unoffended. "That's not what I meant. I meant, it's easier for me to have a reaction to what Chasten does because Chasten likes that. She's animated like me. Harper isn't. I give her silent affirmation. I don't make a show of it. She's like you in that way." His stare was unwavering, but I was almost certain he was buying it, so I continued. "I don't push Harper when she's in those moods, so yes, I do talk about Chasten more. Sometimes I focus on her more. But only because I realize they're two different children, with two different sets of needs. I have to be two different mothers to each of them." I was good at spewing bullshit. It's why I became a writer. Jeremy's anger was slowly melting away. His jaw wasn't as tense as he ran a hand through his hair, taking in what I had just said. "I worry about Harper," he said. "More than I should, I'm sure. I don't think treating them differently is the right thing to do going forward. Harper might notice the difference." A month earlier, one of the daycare workers had expressed concern to me about Harper. It wasn't until that moment, when Jeremy was expressing his concern for her, that I remembered her mentioning it to me. She said she thinks we should have her tested for Asperger's. I had forgotten all about it until that moment during my fight with Jeremy. And thank God I remembered, because it was the perfect way to back up my defense. "I wasn't going to mention this because I didn't want you to worry," I said to him. "But one of their daycare teachers told me she thinks we should have Harper tested for Asperger's." Jeremy's concern grew tenfold in that moment. I tried to subdue that concern as quickly as possible. "I've called a specialist already. At least I will put a call in tomorrow. They're going to call back when they have an opening." Jeremy pulled out his phone, becoming sidetracked by the potential diagnosis. "They think Harper is on the autism spectrum?" I took his phone from his hands. "Don't. You'll worry yourself sick until the appointment. Let's speak to the specialist first, because the internet isn't the place we need to seek out answers for our daughter." He nodded, and then pulled me in for a hug. I'm sorry, he whispered against the side of my head. It's been a shitty week. I lost a big client at work today.
You don't have to work, Jeremy. I make enough money for you to spend more time at home with the girls if that would make it easier.
I would go insane if I didn't work.
Maybe so, but it's going to be really expensive putting three kids through daycare.
We can afford.
He paused, pulling back.
Did you say three?
I nodded. I was lying, of course, but I wanted the mood of the night to disappear. I wanted him to be happy, and he was so happy after I told him I was pregnant again.
Are you sure? I thought you didn't want more.
I was sloppy with the pill a couple of weeks ago. It's still early, really early. I found out this morning. I smiled. Then I smiled even bigger.
You're happy about it.
Of course I am. Are you? He laughed a little, then he kissed me.
And all was back to normal. Thank God.
I gripped his shirt in my fist and kissed him back with everything in me, wanting him to forget all about the fight we were having. He could tell by my kiss that I wanted more than just a kiss. He took off my shirt, then took off his own. He kissed me as he backed up to the bed. When he removed my pants, he saw the bra and panties I had put on for him.
You're wearing lingerie?
He asked. He dropped his head into my neck.
And you made my favorite meal,
he said, disappointed. I wasn't sure why he sounded disappointed until he pulled back, brushed hair from my face, and said,
I am so sorry, Verity. You were trying to make tonight special, and I ruined it for you.
What he doesn't understand is that he could never ruin a night for me when it ends with him loving me, focusing on me. I shook my head. You didn't ruin it.
I did. I threw my food. I yelled at you.
He brought his mouth to mine.
I'll make it up to you.
And he did. He fucked me slowly, kissing me the whole time, taking turns with each nipple as he sucked them. Had I breastfed, would he be enjoying my breasts as much? I doubted it. Even after twins, my body was nearly perfect. Aside from the scar on my abdomen, the most important parts of me were still intact, still fairly firm, and Jeremy's temple between my legs was still nice and tight. When he had me close to the edge, he pulled out of me.
I want to taste you,
he said, moving down my body until his tongue was spreading me apart. Of course you want to taste me, I thought. I kept things intact for you down there. You're welcome. He stayed between my legs until I came for him, twice. When he began to crawl back up my body, he paused at my stomach and kissed me there. Then he was inside of me again, his mouth on mine.
I love you,
he whispered between kisses.
Thank you.
He was thanking me for being pregnant. He made love to me with so much care, with so much compassion. It was almost worth faking the pregnancy just to have him love me like that again, to get our connection back. If there was one good thing the girls brought to our life, it was that Jeremy seemed to love me the most when I was pregnant. Now that he thought I was about to give him a third child, I could already feel his love multiplying again. There was a small part of me that was concerned about faking the pregnancy, but I knew I had options if I didn't get pregnant that week. Miscarriages were just as easy to fake as pregnancies.
16. It's been another week of reading Verity's manuscript, and I'm bored. I'm finding it repetitive. Chapter after chapter of detailed sex with Jeremy, very little to do with her children. She wrote two paragraphs about Crew's birth, but then went on to talk about the first time they were able to fuck after Crew was born. It got to a point where I started feeling jealous.
I don't like reading about Jeremy's sex life. I skimmed a chapter this morning, but finally tossed it aside to get back to work. I finished the outline for the first book today and submitted it to Corey for feedback. He said he'd forward it to the editor at Pantom, because he still hasn't read any of Verity's books and wouldn't know if the outline is sufficient. Until I hear back from them, I don't really want to start on the second outline. If they come back wanting changes, it will have been work wasted. I've been here almost 2 weeks now. Corey says they processed my advance, and it should hit my account any day now. Once I get the feedback from Pantom, it'll likely be time for me to move on. I've done all I can do in Verity's office. If it weren't for not having anywhere to go until that money hits my account, I'd have already left. I hit a wall today. I'm burnt out from working so much these past 2 weeks, and I could read more of Verity's autobiography, but I'm really not in the mood to read about all the ways Verity can suck her husband's dick. I miss television. I haven't stepped foot in their living room since I arrived here almost 2 weeks ago. I leave the confines of Verity's office and make myself a bag of popcorn, then sit on the living room sofa and turn on the television. I deserve to be a little lazy because tomorrow is my birthday, but I'm not planning on telling Jeremy that. I keep glancing at the top of the stairs because I have the perfect view of it from the couch. But Jeremy is nowhere. I haven't seen much of him over the last couple of days. I think we both know how close we came to kissing the other night, and how inappropriate that would have been, so we've been avoiding each other. I turn the channel to HGTV and settle into the couch. I've watched about 15 minutes of a house remodel when I finally hear Jeremy coming down the stairs. He pauses mid-step when he sees me in the living room. Then he descends the rest of the stairs and makes his way over, joining me on the couch. He sits in the middle, close enough to reach over and grab a few pieces of my popcorn, but far enough away that we aren't in danger of touching. "Research?" he says, propping his feet up on the coffee table in front of him. I laugh. "Of course, always working." He grabs more popcorn this time, cupping some in his hand. "Verity would binge-watch TV when she had writer's block. She said it sometimes sparked new ideas." I don't want to talk about Verity, so I change the subject. "I finished an outline today. If it gets approved tomorrow, I'll probably leave in a couple of days." Jeremy stops chewing and looks at me. "Yeah?" I like that he doesn't seem happy about the thought of me leaving. "Yes. And thanks for letting me stay longer than I should have." He holds my stare.
"Longer than you should have?"
He starts chewing again and faces the television.
"I don't think it's been long enough."
I don't know what he means by that. If he thinks I didn't do enough work while I was here, or if he's saying it selfishly, like he didn't get to spend enough time with me. Sometimes, especially right now, I feel how much he's drawn to me. But then other times it seems like he works so hard to deny whatever attraction there might be between us. And I get that, I do. But is this how he's going to spend the rest of his life? Giving up huge parts of himself to care for a woman who is just a shell of the person he married? I understand he made vows, but at what cost? His entire life? People get married assuming they'll live long, happy lives together. What happens when one of those is cut short, but the other is expected to live out those vows for the rest of their life? It doesn't seem fair. I know if I were married and my husband were in Jeremy's predicament, I wouldn't want my husband to feel like he could never move on. But I'm not sure I'll ever be as obsessed with a man as Verity was with Jeremy. The show ends and another one begins. Neither of us speaks for several minutes. It's not that I have nothing to say. I have a lot to say.
"I just don't know that it's my place."
"I don't know very much about you," Jeremy says. His head is against the back of the couch, and he's looking at me casually.
"Have you ever been married?"
"Nope," I say. "Came close a couple of times, but it never worked out."
"How old are you?"
Of course he would ask me that when my age will expire in just over an hour. "You wouldn't believe me if I told you." Jeremy laughs.
"Why wouldn't I?"
"Because I'll be 32. Tomorrow."
"Liar?"
"I'm not lying. I'll show you my driver's license."
"Good,
because I don't believe you. I roll my eyes and then go to the master bedroom to grab my purse. I bring back my driver's license and hand it to him. He stares at it, shaking his head. What a shitty birthday, he says. Hanging out with people you barely know, working all day. I shrug. If I wasn't here, I'd just be alone in my apartment. He stares at my driver's license a moment longer. When he runs his thumb over my picture, I get actual chills. He didn't even touch me. He touched my fucking driver's license, and it turned me on. I am pathetic. He hands it back to me and stands up. Where are you going? To make you a cake, he says, walking out of the living room. I smile and then follow him to the kitchen. Jeremy Crawford baking a cake is something I don't want to miss. I'm sitting on the island in the middle of the kitchen, watching him put icing on the cake. In all the days I've been here, this is only the second time I've actually had fun. We haven't talked about Verity or our tragedies or the contract for the past hour. While the cake was baking, I sat on the bar, my legs dangling off the edge of it. Jeremy leaned against the counter in front of me, and we talked about movies, music, our likes and dislikes. We've actually started getting to know each other outside of everything that ties us together. He was relaxed the night we went out to dinner with crew, but I haven't seen him this at ease inside these walls since I arrived. I can almost, almost understand Verity's addiction to him. Go back to the living room, he says as he pulls the candles from a drawer. Why? Because I have to walk in with your cake and sing you happy birthday, give you the full effect. I roll my head and jump off the bar, then go back to the couch. I mute the television because I want to hear him singing me happy birthday without interruptions. I keep hitting the information button on the remote, checking the time. He's waiting for it to turn midnight to make it official. Right when it hits midnight, I can see the flicker of candles as he makes his way around the corner. I laugh when he starts to sing quietly so he doesn't wake up crew. Happy birthday to you, he whispers. He's cut a single slice of cake and stuck a candle in the top of it. Happy birthday to you. I'm still laughing when he reaches the couch, slowly kneeling down on it so he doesn't spill the cake or risk the candle being blown out when he sits next to me. Happy birthday, dear Loewen. Happy birthday to you. We're facing each other on the couch so I can make a wish and blow out the candle. But I'm not sure what to wish for. I've been lucky enough to land a really great job. I'm about to get more money than I've ever had in my bank account at one time. The only thing in my life that I feel like I want right now that I don't have is him. I look him in the eye, then blow out the candle. What'd you wish for? If I tell you, it won't come true. The way he smiles at me seems heavily flirtatious. Maybe you can tell me after it comes true. He doesn't hand me the cake. He makes a show of it, slicing into it with a fork. Do you know what the secret ingredient is to making such a moist cake? He holds out the fork and I take it from him. What is it? Pudding. I take a bite of the cake and smile. It's really good, I say with a mouthful. Pudding, he says again. I laugh. He holds the plate and I take another bite, then offer him the fork. He shakes his head. I had a bite in the kitchen. I don't know why, but I wish I had seen that. I also wish I knew if he tasted like chocolate. Jeremy lifts a hand. You have icing on your... He points at my mouth. I brush at it, but he shakes his head. Right here. He slides his thumb across my bottom lip. I swallow the bite of cake. His thumb doesn't leave my lip. It lingers there. Fuck, I can't breathe. I'm aching everywhere because he's so close, but I don't know what I'm allowed to do about it. I want to drop my fork. I want him to drop the plate of cake. I want him to kiss me. But I'm not the married one here. I don't want to make the first move, and he shouldn't make the first move. But I'm desperate for him. He doesn't drop the cake. Instead, he leans across me and places it on the end table. In the same fluid movement, he brings his hand to my head and presses his lips to mine. even after all the anticipation I've held for this moment, it still feels completely unexpected. I close my eyes and drop the fork on the floor, leaning back into the arm of the couch. He follows me, crawling on top of me, our lips never disconnecting. I part my lips, and he sweeps his tongue inside my mouth. The slowness of the kiss doesn't last long. As soon as we get our first tastes of each other, the kiss becomes manic. It's everything I imagined kissing him would feel like. Radiation, explosives, dynamite, anything and everything dangerous. We taste like chocolate as we trade kisses back and forth, push and pull. His hand is tangled in my hair, and with every second this kiss continues, we become infused with the couch beneath us, him relaxing into me as I melt into the cushions. His mouth leaves mine in search of other parts of me he seems eager to taste. My jaw, my neck, the tops of my breasts. It's as if he's been starving himself of me. He's kissing me and touching me with the hunger of a man who's been fasting his whole life. His hand is sliding up my shirt and his fingers are warm, trickling over my skin like drops of hot water. He's back at my mouth, but only momentarily, long enough to find my tongue before he pulls back and takes off his shirt. My hands go to his chest like they belong there, pressed against the curves of his abdomen. I want to tell him this is what I wished for when I blew out my candle, but I'm afraid any conversation will lead him to think about what we're doing and how we shouldn't be doing it. So I remain quiet. I lean my head back against the arm of the couch, wanting him to explore even more of me. He does. He pulls off my shirt and sees that I'm not wearing a bra beneath my pajamas. He groans, and it's beautiful. And then he takes my nipple into his mouth, forcing a whimper to escape my lips. I lift my head to watch him, but my blood runs cold when my eyes are pulled to the figure standing at the top of the stairs. She's just standing there, watching her husband as his mouth roams over my breast. My entire body stiffens beneath Jeremy. Verity's fists clench at her sides before she rushes back in the direction of her room. I gasp, shoving him, pushing him. Verity, I say, breathless. He stops kissing me and then lifts his head, but he doesn't move. Verity, I say again, wanting him to understand that he needs to get the fuck off me. He lifts up onto his arms, confused. Verity, I say again, but with more urgency. It's all I can say. My fear has taken hold of me, and I struggle to inhale, to exhale. What the fuck? Jeremy is on his knees now, gripping the back of the couch as he moves away.
I'm sorry.
I pull my knees up and scoot to the far end of the couch away from him. I cover my mouth. Oh, God. The words crash against my trembling fingers. He tries to touch my arm reassuringly, but I flinch.
I'm sorry, he says again. I shouldn't have kissed you.
I'm shaking my head because he doesn't understand. He thinks I'm upset and feel guilty that he's married, but I saw her standing. She was standing. I point to the top of the stairs. I saw her. I whisper it quietly, because I'm terrified to say it louder. She was standing at the top of the stairs. I can see the confusion cross his face as he turns to look at the stairs. He looks back at me.
She can't walk, Loen.
I'm not crazy. I stand up and back away from the couch, covering my bare chest with my arm. I point at the stairs again, finding my voice this time. Your fucking wife was standing at the top of the fucking stairs, Jeremy. I know what I saw. He sees in my eyes that I'm telling the truth. 2 seconds pass before he's off the couch and running up the stairs toward her bedroom. He's not leaving me down here alone. I grab my shirt, pull it on over my head, and then run after him. I refuse to be alone in this house for another second. When I reach the top of the stairs, he's standing in her doorway, staring into her room. He hears me approaching. And then he just leaves. He brushes past me without making eye contact and stomps down the stairs. I take several steps until I'm close enough to peek into her room. I only glance in there for 1 second. It's all the time I need to see that she's in bed, under the covers, asleep. I shake my head, feeling my knees wanting to buckle. This can't be happening. I somehow make it to the stairs, but I only make it halfway down them before I have to sit. I can't move. I can barely draw a breath. My heart has never beat this fast. Jeremy is at the bottom of the stairs looking up at me. He probably doesn't know what to think about what just happened. I don't know what to think. He walks back and forth in front of the stairs, looking at me every now and then. I'm sure because he's waiting for me to start laughing at my tasteless joke. It wasn't a joke. I saw her, I whisper. He hears me. He looks at me, not with anger, but with apology. He walks up the stairs and helps me up, then keeps his arm around me as he leads me back down. He takes me to the bedroom and closes the door, then wraps himself around me. I bury my face in his neck, wanting the image of her out of my head. I'm sorry, I tell him. Maybe I haven't been getting enough sleep. It's my fault, Jeremy says, interrupting me. You've been working for 2 weeks without a break. You're exhausted. And then It's paranoia. Guilt. I don't know. He pulls back, holding my face with both hands. I think we both need about 12 hours of solid sleep. I'm convinced by what I saw. We can blame it on exhaustion or guilt, but I saw her. I saw everything. Her fists clenched at her sides, the anger in her expression before she rushed away. Do you want some water? I shake my head. I don't want him to leave. I don't want to be alone. Please don't leave me alone tonight, I beg. His expression doesn't reveal what he's thinking at all. He nods, just a little, and says, I won't, but I need to turn off the TV and lock the doors. Put the cake in the fridge. He heads for the door. I'll be back in a few minutes. I go to the bathroom and wash my face, hoping the cold water will help calm me. It doesn't. When I return to the bedroom, Jeremy is sliding the lock across the top of the door. I can't stay all night, he says. I don't want Crew to get scared if he wakes up and can't find me. I climb into the bed and face the window. Jeremy climbs in behind me, then wraps himself around me. I can feel his heartbeat, and it's almost as fast as mine. He shares the pillow with me, finds my hand, and slides his fingers through mine. I try to mimic his pattern of breathing so that mine will slow down. I'm breathing through my nose because my jaw is clamped too tight to take in normal breaths. Jeremy presses a kiss to the side of my head. Relax, he whispers. You're okay. I try to relax, and maybe I do, but it's only because we both lie here for so long. It's hard for muscles to retain that much tension after a while. Jeremy? I whisper. He runs a thumb across my hand to let me know he hears me. Is there a chance? Could she be faking her injuries? He doesn't answer right away, almost as if he has to give the question some thought. No, he finally says. I saw the scans. But people get better. Injuries heal. I know, he says. But Verity wouldn't fake something like this. No one would. It would be impossible. I close my eyes, because he's trying to reassure me that he knows her well enough to know that she wouldn't do something like that. But if there's one thing I know that Jeremy doesn't, it's that he doesn't know Verity at all. 17. I went to bed convinced I had seen Verity at the top of the stairs last night. I woke up full of doubt. I've spent most of my life not trusting myself in my sleep. Now I'm starting to not trust myself when I'm awake. Did I see her? Was it a hallucination because of stress? Did I feel guilty for being with her husband? I lay in bed for a while this morning, not wanting to leave the room. Jeremy left my bed sometime around 4 this morning. I heard him lock the door, then he texted me a minute later and told me to text if I needed him again. Sometime after lunch today, Jeremy knocked on the door to the office. When he came inside, he looked like he hadn't slept. He hasn't slept much this week at all because of me. From his point of view, I'm a hysterical mess of a woman who wakes up in his wife's bed in the middle of the night and then claims I see his wife standing at the top of the stairs after he finally kisses me. I thought he had come to the office to ask me to leave, and honestly, I'm more than ready to go. But the money still hasn't hit my account. I'm kind of stuck here until it does. He had come to my office to let me know he got another lock, for Verity's door this time. I thought it might help you sleep, knowing there's no way she could leave the room if that were even possible. If that were even possible. I'll only lock it at night, when we're asleep. He continues. I told April her door comes open at night because of drafts in the house. I don't want her to think it's there for any other reason. I thanked him, but after he'd gone, I didn't feel reassured at all, because part of me worried that he'd put the lock there because he was worried. Of course I wanted him to believe me, but if he believed me, that meant it might be true. In this case, I would rather be wrong than right. I'm struggling with what to do with Verity's manuscript now. I want Jeremy to understand his wife in the way that I now understand her. I feel like he deserves to know what she did to his girls, especially since Crew spends so much time up there with her. And I'm still full of suspicion since he spoke of Verity talking to him. I know he's only 5, so there's a chance he was confused. But if there's even a remote possibility that Verity could be faking it, Jeremy deserves to know. But I haven't worked up the courage to give the manuscript to him yet, because it is just a remote possibility that she's faking it. It would be more plausible to believe I was seeing things due to exhaustion and sleep deprivation than it would be to think a woman could fake a disability of that extent for months on end, without any apparent reason. There's also the fact that I haven't finished it yet. I don't know how it ends. I don't know what happened to Harper or Chasten, or if the timeline of this manuscript even covers those events. There isn't much left to read. I'll probably only be able to digest one chapter before needing to take a break from the horror of this manuscript. I make sure the door to the office is closed, and I start the next chapter and decide to skip it, along with several others. I don't even want to read about a simple kiss, much less more sex. I don't want to ruin the kiss we shared by reading about him doing that with another woman. When I've skipped yet another intimate scene and reached the chapter I feel may be an explanation for Chasten's death, I double-check the office door again before starting it.
Chapter 13. I got pregnant with Crew within 2 weeks of lying to Jeremy about my pregnancy. It's as if fate were on my side. I thank God with a prayer, even though I don't believe he had a hand in it. Crew was a good baby, I'm assuming. By that point, I was making so much money, I was able to afford a full-time nanny at our new house. Jeremy was staying home with the kids after quitting his job and didn't think a nanny was really necessary. So I called the nanny our housekeeper, but she was a nanny. She enabled Jeremy to work on the property every day. I had new windows installed in my office so I could watch him from almost every angle. Life was good for a while. I did all the easy parts of mothering, and Jeremy and the nanny did all the hard parts. And I traveled a lot. I had book tours and interviews, which I didn't really like leaving Jeremy for, but he preferred to stay home with the kids. I grew to appreciate those breaks, though. I noticed when I was gone for a week, the attention Jeremy gave me when I returned home was like the attention he used to pay me before the kids came along. Sometimes I would lie and say I was needed in New York, but I would hole up in an Airbnb in Chelsea and watch television for a week. Then I'd go home, and Jeremy would fuck me like I was his virgin. Life was great. Until it wasn't. It happened in an instant. It was like the sun froze and darkened on our lives, and no matter how hard we tried, the rays couldn't reach us after that. I was standing at the sink, washing a chicken. A fucking raw chicken. I could have been doing anything else. Watering the lawn, writing, knitting, anything else. But I will forever think of that fucking disgusting raw chicken when I think about the moment we were told we lost Chasten. The phone rang. I was washing the chicken. Jeremy answered it. I was washing the chicken. He raised his voice. Still washing the fucking chicken. And then the sound. That guttural, painful sound. I heard him say no, and how, and where is she, and we'll be right there. When he ended the call, I could see him in the reflection of the window. He was in the hallway gripping the doorframe like he was going to fall to his knees if he didn't. I was still washing the chicken. Tears were streaming down my cheeks. My knees were weak. My stomach began to lurch. I vomited on the chicken. That's how I'll always remember one of the worst moments of my life. On our entire drive to the hospital, I was wondering how Harper had done it. Had she smothered her, like in my dream? Or had she come up with a more clever way to murder her sister? They had been at a sleepover at their friend Maria's house. They'd been there several times before. And Maria's mother, Kitty, what a silly name, knew all about Chasten's allergies. Chasten never traveled without her EpiPen, but Kitty had found her unresponsive that morning. She dialed 911 and then called Jeremy as soon as the ambulance took her. When we arrived at the hospital, Jeremy still had that faint hope that they were wrong and that Chasten was okay. Kitty met us in the hallway and kept saying, "I'm sorry, she wouldn't wake up." That's all she told us. She wouldn't wake up. She didn't say she's dead, just she wouldn't wake up. Like Chasten was some kind of spoiled brat who wanted to sleep in. Jeremy ran down the hall, into the patient hallway of the ER. They escorted him out and told us we needed to wait in the family room. Everyone knows that's the room where they put the surviving members after someone has died. That's when Jeremy knew she was gone. I'd never heard him scream like that. A grown man on his knees, sobbing like a child. I'd have been embarrassed for him if I wasn't right there with him. When we finally got to see her, she'd been dead less than a day, but she didn't smell like Chasten. She already smelled like death. Jeremy asked so many questions, all the questions. How did it happen? Did they have peanuts in the house? What time did they go to sleep? Was her EpiPen taken out of her bag at all? All the right questions. All the devastatingly right answers. It was over a week before her cause of death was confirmed. Anaphylaxis. We were hypervigilant about her peanut allergy. No matter where they went or who they were left with, Jeremy spent half an hour telling the mother their routine, explaining how to use the EpiPen. I always thought it was overkill, since we'd literally only had to use it once in her entire life. Kitty was well aware of her allergy and kept nuts out of their reach when the girls were there. What she wasn't aware of was that the girls had snuck into the pantry and grabbed a handful of snacks to take back to their room in the middle of the night. Chasten was only 8. It was late at night and dark when the girls decided they wanted a snack. Harper said they didn't realize anything they were eating contained peanuts. But when they woke up the next morning, Chasten wouldn't wake up. Jeremy went through a period of denial, but he never questioned that Chasten unknowingly ate the nuts. But I did. I knew. Every time I looked at Harper, I could see her guilt. I had been waiting on this to happen for years. I knew from when they were 6 months old that Harper would find a way to kill her. And what a perfect murder she committed. Even her own father would never suspect her. Her mother, though, I was a little harder to convince. I missed Chasten, obviously, and I was saddened by her death. But there was something unpleasant in how hard Jeremy took it. He was devastated, numb. After she'd been dead for 3 months, I was growing impatient. We'd only had sex twice since her death, and he hadn't even kissed me with tongue either time. It's like he was disconnected from me, using me to get off, to feel better, to get a quick rush of something other than agony. I wanted more than that. I wanted the old Jeremy back. I tried one night. I rolled over and put my hand on his dick while he was asleep. I rubbed my hand up and down, waiting for it to grow hard. It didn't. Instead, he brushed my hand away and said, "It's okay, Verity. You don't have to." He said it like he was doing me a favor, like he was turning me down for my reassurance. I didn't need reassurance. I didn't. I'd had over 8 years to accept it. I knew it was coming. I had dreamt about it. I gave Chasten all the love I had every minute she was alive, because I knew it would happen. I knew Harper would do something like that to her. Not that it could ever be proven that Harper had any involvement. Even if I had tried to prove it to him, Jeremy would never believe me. He loves her too much. He'd never believe such an atrocious thing, that a twin could do that to her own sister. Part of me felt responsible. Had I just tried choking her again as an infant, or leaving an open bottle of bleach near her as a toddler, or ramming the passenger side of my car into a tree while she was unbuckled with the airbag turned off, all of it could have been avoided. So many potential accidents I could have staged, should have staged. Had I stopped Harper before she acted, we would still have Chasten. And then maybe Jeremy wouldn't be so fucking sad all the time.
18. Verity is in the living room. April brought her down in the elevator right before she left for the evening. An unusual change in their routine that I'm not sure I like. April said, "She's wide awake this evening. I thought I'd let Jeremy put her to bed tonight." She left her in front of the television, her wheelchair parked near the sofa. Verity is watching Wheel of Fortune, or staring in that direction, anyway. I'm standing in the doorway to the living room, looking at her. Jeremy is upstairs with crew. It's dark outside, and the living room light isn't on. But there's enough light from the television that I can see Verity's expressionless face. I can't imagine anyone going to such great lengths to fake an injury for this long. I'm not even sure how someone could pull it off. Would she startle at a loud noise? Next to me, near the entryway to the living room, is a bowl full of decorative glass balls, mixed in with wooden ones. I look around, then pluck one of the wooden ones out of the bowl. I toss it in her direction. When it hits the floor in front of her, she doesn't flinch. I know she's not paralyzed, so how does she not even flinch? Even if her brain damage is too severe to understand the English language, she'd still be alarmed by noise, right? Have some kind of reaction. Unless she's trained herself to not react. I watch her for a little longer before I start to creep myself out with my own thoughts again. I return to the kitchen, leaving her alone with Pat Sajak and Vanna White. There are only two chapters left of Verity's manuscript. I'm praying I don't find a part two anywhere before I leave here, because I can't take the ups and downs of it all. The anxiety I get after every chapter is worse than the anxiety I get after I sleepwalk. I'm relieved she had nothing to do with Chasten's death, but disturbed by her thought process during all of it. She seemed so detached, two-dimensional. She'd lost her fucking daughter, yet all she thought about was how she should have killed Harper, and she was fed up with waiting for Jeremy to get over his grief. Disturbing is putting it mildly. Luckily, it's coming to an end soon. Most of the manuscript details things that happened years ago, but this last chapter was more recent, less than a year ago, months before Harper's death. Harper's death. It's the thing I plan to get to next. Maybe tonight, I don't know. I haven't slept well the last few days, and I'm worried after I finish the manuscript I won't be able to sleep at all. I'm making spaghetti for Jeremy and crew tonight. I try to focus on dinner and not at all on Verity's lack of a soul. I purposely timed this meal so that April would be gone before dinner was ready,
and I'm hoping Jeremy takes Verity up to bed before it's time to eat. My birthday is almost over, and I'll be damned if I eat my birthday meal seated next to Verity Crawford. I'm stirring the pasta sauce when I realize I haven't heard the television in a few minutes. I carefully loosen my grip on the spoon, placing it on the stove next to the pan. Jeremy? I say, hoping he's in the living room, hoping he's the reason there's no sound coming from the television anymore.
Be down in a second,
he calls from upstairs. I close my eyes, already feeling the quickening of my pulse. If this bitch turned off that goddamn television, I'm walking out that front door without shoes on, and I'm never coming back. I clench my fists at my sides, growing really tired of this shit, this house, and that fucking creepy-ass psychotic woman. I don't tiptoe into the living room. I stomp. The television is still on, but it's no longer making noise. Verity is still in the same position. I walk over to the table next to her wheelchair and snatch up the remote. The television is now on mute, and I am over this. I'm over this. Televisions don't just mute themselves. You're a fucking cunt, I mutter. My own words shock me, but not enough to walk away. It's as if every word I read of her manuscript fans the flames inside of me. I unmute the television and drop the remote on the couch, out of her reach. I kneel down in front of her, positioning myself so that I'm directly in her line of sight. I'm shaking, but not from fear this time. I'm shaking because I'm so angry at her. Angry at the type of wife she was to Jeremy, the kind of mother she was to Harper. And I'm angry that all this weird shit keeps happening, and I'm the only one who is witnessing it. I'm tired of feeling crazy. You don't even deserve the body you're trapped in, I whisper, staring straight into her eyes. I hope you die with a throat full of your own vomit, the same way you attempted to kill your infant daughter. I wait. If she's in there, if she heard me, if she's faking it, my words would reach her. They would make her flinch, or lash out, or something. She doesn't move. I try to think of something else to say that would make her react, something she wouldn't be able to keep her composure after hearing. I stand up and lean into her, bringing my mouth to her ear. Jeremy is going to fuck me in your bed tonight. I wait again, for a noise, for a movement. The only thing I notice is the smell of urine. It fills the air, my nostrils. I look down at her pants right when Jeremy begins to descend the stairs.
Did you need me?
I back away from her, accidentally kicking the wooden ball I tossed toward her earlier. I motion toward Verity while bending down for the ball. She needs to be changed, I think. Jeremy grabs the handles of her wheelchair and pushes her out of the living room toward the elevator. I bring a hand to my face, covering my mouth and nose as I exhale. I don't know why I've never been curious about who bathes her or changes her. I assumed the nurse took care of most of that, but she obviously doesn't do it all. That Verity is incontinent and has to wear diapers and be bathed makes me feel even sorrier for him. Jeremy is now taking her upstairs to do both of those things, and it makes me angry. Angry at Verity. Surely her current state is a result of the terrible human she's been to her children and to Jeremy. Now, for the rest of his life, Jeremy will have to suffer the consequences of Verity's karma. It isn't right. And even though she flinched at nothing I said, the fact that I seem to scare her has me convinced she's in there, somewhere. And now she knows I'm not afraid of her. I ate dinner at the table with Crew, who played on his iPad the whole time. I wanted to wait for Jeremy, but I knew he didn't want Crew to eat alone, and it was getting past his bedtime. While Jeremy was tending to Verity, I put Crew to bed. By the time Jeremy got her showered, changed, and put to bed, the spaghetti was cold. Jeremy finally comes downstairs as I'm washing the dishes. We haven't talked much since our kiss. I'm not sure what the vibe will be between us, or if we're going to be awkward and go our separate ways after he eats. I can hear him behind me, munching on garlic bread as I continue to wash the dishes.
Sorry about that, he says.
What?
Missing dinner.
I shrug. You didn't miss it. Eat. He takes a bowl out of the cabinet and fills it with spaghetti. He puts it in the microwave and then leans into the counter next to me.
Lowen.
I look at him.
What's wrong?
I shake my head. Nothing, Jeremy. It's not my place.
It is now that you said that.
I don't want to have this conversation with him. It really isn't my place. This is his life, his wife, his house, and I'm only going to be here for another 2 days at the most. I dry my hands on a towel just as the microwave beeps. He doesn't move to open it because he's too busy staring at me, attempting to coax more out of me with that look. I lean against the island and sigh, dropping my head back. I feel bad for you.
Don't.
I can't help it.
You can.
No, I can't. He opens the microwave and pulls out his bowl. He sets it on the counter to cool off and then faces me again.
This is my life, Lo, and I can't do anything about it. You feeling sorry for me doesn't help.
I roll my head.